Chapter 101. Dear Street Andrew, the whiskey arrived in due course from over the water. Last week one bottle of it was extracted from the wood and inserted into me, on the installment plan, with this result, that I believe it to be the best smoothest whiskey now on the planet. Thanks, oh, thanks. I have discarded Peruna, hoping that you three are well, and happy and will be coming back before the winter sets in. I am, sincerely yours, Mark. It must have been a small bottle, to be consumed by him in a week, or perhaps he had able assistance. The next brief line refers to the manuscript of his article, St. Joan of Arc, presented to the museum at Rouen. To Edward E. Clarke. 25th Ave. February, 1906. Dear Sir, I have found the original manuscript, and with great pleasure I transmit it herewith, also a printed copy. It is a matter of great pride to me to have any word of mine concerning the world's supremest heroine honored by a place in that museum. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens. The series of letters which follows was prepared by Mark Twain and General Fred Grant, mainly with a view of advertising the lecture that Clemens had agreed to deliver for the benefit of the Robert Fulton Monument Association. It was, in fact, to be Mark Twain's farewell lecture, and the association had really proposed to pay him $1,000 for it. The exchange of these letters, however, was never made outside of Mark Twain's bedroom. Propped against the pillows, pen in hand, with General Grant beside him, they arranged the series with the idea of publication. Later the plan was discarded, so that this pleasant foolery appears here for the first time. Private and confidential correspondence. Telegram, Army Headquarters, date, Mark Twain, New York, would you consider a proposal to talk at Carnegie Hall for the benefit of the Robert Fulton Monument Association, of which you are a vice president, for a fee of $1,000? F.D. Grant, President, Fulton Monument Association. Telegraphic answer. Major General F.D. Grant, Army Headquarters. I shall be glad to do it, but I must stipulate that you keep the $1,000 and add it to the monument fund as my contribution. Clemens. Letters. Dear Mr. Clemens, you have the thanks of the association, and the terms shall be as you say. But why give all of it? Why not reserve a portion? Why should you do this work wholly without compensation? Truly yours, Fred. D. Grant. Major General Grant, Army Headquarters. Dear General, because I stopped talking for pay a good many years ago, and I could not resume the habit now without a great deal of personal discomfort. I love to hear myself talk, because I get so much instruction and moral upheaval out of it, but I lose the bulk of this joy when I charge for it. Let the terms stand. General, if I have your approval, I wish to use this good occasion to retire permanently from the platform. Truly yours, S. 50. Clemens. Dear Mr. Clemens, certainly. But as an old friend, permit me to say, don't do that. Why should you? You are not old yet. Yours truly, Fred D. Grant. Dear General, I mean the pay platform. I shan't retire from the gratis platform until after I am dead, and courtesy requires me to keep still and not disturb the others. What shall I talk about? My idea is this. To instruct the audience about Robert Fulton, and tell me, was that his real name, or was it his nom de plume? However, never mind, it is not important, I can skip it, and the house will think I knew all about it, but forgot. Could you find out for me if he was one of the signers of the Declaration, and which one? But if it is any trouble, let it alone, I can skip it. Was he out with Paul Jones? Will you ask Horace Porter? And ask him if he brought both of them home. These will be very interesting facts, if they can be established. But never mind, don't trouble Porter, I can establish them anyway. The way I look at it, they are historical gems, gems of the very first water. Well, that is my idea, as I have said. First, excite the audience with a spoonful of information about Fulton, then quiet down with a barrel of illustration drawn by memory from my books, and if you don't say anything the house will think they never heard of it before, because people don't really read your books, they only say they do, to keep you from feeling bad. Next, excite the house with another spoonful of Fultonian fact, then tranquilize them again with another barrel of illustration. And so on, all through the evening. And if you are discreet, and don't tell them the illustrations don't illustrate anything, they won't notice it and I will send them home as well informed about Robert Fulton as I am myself. Don't be afraid. I know all about audiences. They believe everything you say, except when you are telling the truth. Truly yours, S50. Clemens. P. SS Mark all the advertisements, private and confidential, otherwise the people will not read them. MT, dear Mr. Clemens, how long shall you talk? I ask in order, that we may be able to say when carriages may be called. Very truly yours, Hugh Gordon Miller, Secretary. Dear Mr. Miller, I cannot say for sure. It is my custom, to keep on talking till I get the audience cowed. Sometimes it takes an hour and 15 minutes, sometimes I can do it in an hour. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Mem. My charge is 2 boxes free. Not the choicest, sell the choicest, and give me any 6-seat boxes you please. S50. See, I want Fred Grant in uniform, on the stage. Also the rest of the officials of the association. Also other distinguished people, all the attractions we can get. Also, a seat for Mr. Albert Bigelow Payne, who may be useful to me, if he is near me, and on the front. S50. See, the seat chosen for the writer of these notes, was to be at the front of the stage in order that the lecturer might lean over now, and then and pretend to be asking information concerning Fulton. I was not entirely happy in the thought of this showy honor, and breathed more freely when this plan was abandoned, and the part assigned to General Grant. The lecture was given in Carnegie Hall, which had been gaily decorated for the occasion. The house was more than filled, and a great sum of money was realized for the fund. It was that spring that Gorky and Tchaikovsky, the Russian revolutionists, came to America hoping to arouse interest in their cause. The idea of the overthrow of the Russian dynasty was pleasant to Mark Twain. Few things would have given him greater comfort than to have known that a little more than 10 years would see the downfall of Russian imperialism. The letter which follows was a reply to an invitation from Tchaikovsky, urging him to speak at one of the meetings. Dear Mr. Tchaikovsky, I thank you for the honor of the invitation, but I am not able to accept it, because on Thursday evening I shall be presiding at a meeting whose object is to find remunerative work for certain classes of our blind who would gladly support themselves, if they had the opportunity. My sympathies are with the Russian Revolution, of course. It goes without saying. I hope it will succeed, and now that I have talked with you, I take heart to believe it will. Government by falsified promises, by lies, by treacheries, and by the butcher knife for the aggrandizement of a single family of drones, and its idle and vicious kin has been born quite long enough in Russia, I should think, and it is to be hoped, that the roused nation, now rising in its strength, will presently put an end to it, and set up the republic in its place. Some of us, even of the white-headed, may live to see the blessed day, when czars and grand dukes will be as scarce there as I trust they are in heaven. Most sincerely yours, Mark Twain. There came another summer at Dublin, New Hampshire, this time in the fine Upton residence on the other slope of Monadnock, a place of equally beautiful surroundings, and an even more extended view. Clemens was at this time working steadily on his so-called autobiography, which was not that, in fact, but a series of remarkable chapters, reminiscent, reflective, commentative, written without any particular sequence, as to time or subject matter. He dictated these chapters to a stenographer, usually in the open air, sitting in a comfortable rocker or pacing up and down the long veranda that faced a vast expanse of wooded slope and lake and distant blue mountains. It became one of the happiest occupations of his later years. To W.D. Howells, in Maine. Dublin, Sunday, June 17, 06. Dear Howells, the dictating goes lazily and pleasantly on. With intervals. I find that I have been at it, off and on, nearly 2 hours a day for 155 days, since January 9. To be exact, I've dictated 75 hours in 80 days and loafed 75 days. I've added 60,000 words in the month that I've been here, which indicates that I've dictated during 20 days of that time 40 hours, at an average of 1,500 words an hour. It's a plenty, and I am satisfied. There's a good deal of that I've dictated, from January 9, 210,000 words, and the ad adds about 50,000 more. The ad is old pigeon old things of the years gone by, which our editors didn't ask to print. For instance, I am dumping in the little old book which I read to you in Hartford about 30 years ago, and which you said ooblish and asked Dean Stanley to furnish an introduction. He'll do it. Apton Stormfield's Visit to Heaven. It reads quite to suit me, without altering a word, now that it isn't to see print until I am dead. Tomorrow I mean to dictate a chapter which will get my heirs and assigns burned alive if they venture to print it this side of 2006 A.D., which I judge they won't. There'll be lots of such chapters if I live 3 or 4 years longer. The edition of A.D. 2006 will make a stir when it comes out. I shall be hovering around taking notice, along with other dead pals. You are invited. Mark. His tendency to estimate the measure of the work he was doing, and had completed, must have clung to him from his old printer days. The chapter which was to get his heirs, and the signs burned alive was on the Orthodox God, and there was more than one such chapter. In the next letter he refers to two exquisite poems by Howells, and the writer of these notes recalls his wonderful reading of them aloud. In Our Town was a collection of short stories then recently issued by William Allen White. Howells had recommended them. To W.D. Howells, in Maine. 21/5 A. Tuesday Eve. Dear Howells, it is lovely of you to say those beautiful things. I don't know how to thank you enough. But I love you, that I know. I read Stir the Wedding aloud, and we felt all the pain of it and the truth. It was very moving, and very beautiful, would have been over-comingly moving, at times, but for the haltings and pauses compelled by the difficulties of MS. These were a protection, in that they furnished me time to brace up my voice, and get a new start. John wanted to keep the MS for another reading aloud, and for Epps too, I suspected, but I said it would be safest to write you about it. I like In Our Town. Particularly that kernel of the Lookout Mountain Oration, and very particularly pages 212-16. I wrote and told White so. After Stir the Wedding I read The Mother aloud, and sounded its human deeps with your deep sea lead. I had not read it before, since it was first published. I have been dictating some fearful things, for 4 successive mornings for no eye, but yours to see until I have been dead a century if then. But I got them out of my system, where they had been festering for years, and that was the main thing. I feel better now. I came down today on business from house to house in 12 1-2 hours, and expected to arrive dead, but am neither tired nor sleepy. Yours as always, Mark. To William Allen White, in Emporia, Cans. : Dublin, New Hampshire, June 24, 1906. Dear Mr. White, Howells told me that In Our Town was a charming book, and indeed it is. All of it is delightful when read oneself. Parts of it can score finely, when subjected to the most exacting of tests, the reading aloud. Pages 197 and 216 are of that grade. I have tried them a couple of times on the family, and pages 212 and 216 are qualified to fetch any house of any country, caste or color, endowed with those riches which are denied to no nation on the planet, humor and feeling. Talk again, the country is listening. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.